The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. I'm Paul Sweeney, along with my co-host, Vani Quinn.
Every business day, we bring you interviews from CEOs, market pros, and Bloomberg experts, along with essential market-moving news.
Find the Bloomberg Markets Podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and on Bloomberg.com. Well, I think I just figured out why Tom Keene was not in today. He is home with his computer online shopping, and I'm sure he's got a lot of other folks there joining him. It's supposed to be a record Cyber Monday here as more and more people shop online, abandon the stores, and go online. John Copeland, VP of Marketing and Customer Insights at Adobe. He joins us. Adobe's based in San Jose, California. So, John, give us the early read here of a Black Friday going into a Cyber Monday, leading us to the final weeks of holiday shopping.
Yeah, so it's been a record-breaking Thanksgiving weekend already with over $23.5 billion in online sales. That's a 23% increase over last year. Today, Cyber Monday, we are expecting a day to break all previous records for U.S. online sales, coming in somewhere between $10.8 and $12.7 billion. That'll be somewhere between a 15 and 33% increase over last year.
So it's interesting, you think about those numbers that you just mentioned, John, in terms of, you know, the overall numbers and some of the growth rates and so on. It's just extraordinary, given what's going on in the world, given tough times that many consumers find themselves in here as a result of the pandemic and unemployment. Seems like a lot of this unemployment is now chronic unemployment. What do you make of it?
Yeah, you know, part of what we're seeing is really people trying to have as much of a kind of normal Christmas and celebration as possible, right? I mean, I've seen a lot of stories about people setting up their Christmas decorations even before Thanksgiving. In fact, we did that in our house this year, trying to have more of that kind of traditional end-of-year holiday spirit in the context of this really, really challenging year. And so people are doing what they can to try and bring as much of a normal end-of-year holiday home as they can.
All right. So, John, we already saw, obviously, even before the pandemic, a years-long trend of more and more share of retail sales going to online. It seems to have been dramatically accelerated here during the pandemic. Is there any reason to think that post-pandemic it's going to kind of ebb and maybe go the other way, or is some of these market shifts that we've seen, are they more permanent?
Yeah, you know, that's the question everybody's really asking and interested in. We expect that, you know, a good chunk of this new digital behavior will probably stick around as consumers are finding out that, you know, the convenience of online ordering and either having it delivered to their home or being able to pick up in store, even through contactless delivery, has just become so convenient for them. It'll probably bounce back, and you know, people will be doing a lot offline as soon as they can and as soon as they feel safe and comfortable doing that. But you know, we've continued to see this digital increase, certainly during the holidays, for example, a good 13 to 15% a year. This year is really like 2 years of growth packed into a single year. Wow. And that's really going to be hard for people to step away from, even when they can.
So that kind of goes to the question, you know, when you talk about retail, whenever you have a discussion, maybe even over the last decade or so, it comes to the question of, to what extent is the U.S. Retail footprint overstored? And then when you get, you know, a period that we're going through right now where we're seeing so many people going over to e-commerce, it kind of brings that question to the fore yet again. What's your thought about that as you look at the U.S. retail landscape?
Yeah, I think this year has really shown that, I don't know so much about being overstored, but certainly maybe under-digitaled, if you will. And that's one of the things that we see a lot of businesses pushing into accelerating their digital transformations this year, retail as well as other sectors of the economy really pushing hard into digital. And as that happens, we expect to see even more kind of fundamental disruptions to the way, you know, business models work. And if you're not in a digital channel, it's going to be really, really difficult.
So, John, give us a sense of what's hot this holiday season from a product perspective and maybe what's not.
Yeah, so one of the, well, instead of the what's not, I can definitely tell you, for example, the electronic game platforms, you know,
right.
PS5, Xbox, and all of the games that go with them. So NBA 2K21, Madden NFL 21, Just Dance 2020, really hot right now. In terms of toys more generally, Star Wars toys are really big. Nerf is really big right now. Paw
yeah.
Patrol. Right. We expect to see a lot with, you know, even still continuing successes of like LOL Surprise and Hatchimals will continue to be strong this holiday season.
So, John, you know, we saw in the beginning of the pandemic, some of these retailers, apparel retailers file for bankruptcy. Are we going to see more of that in 2021?
That's really tough to say. I think as retailers are figuring out how to make digital work and they're pushing harder to get more sales through there, hopefully that will tide them over while the economy, you know, begins to get back to normal as we start to see, you know, light at the end of the tunnel and the vaccines become available. And hopefully, you know, things can begin to turn around in 2021.
Hey, John, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We know you're busy this time of the year. John Copeland, VP of Marketing and Customer Insights at Adobe, based in San Jose, California. You know, generally, what we're hearing here is retail sales here during this Black Friday, Cyber Monday, generally pretty healthy when given everything that we are dealing with. So there's that for the consumer. Let's switch gears right now and talk about commodities, particularly crude oil. And there's really no one better to do that with than Ellen Wald, president of Transversal Consulting. She's also a Bloomberg opinion contributor. So, Ellen, I'd love to talk to you about OPEC. What do you expect for their upcoming meeting here? I'm looking at WTI crude at $45. Seems kind of range bound here. What are you looking for?
Yeah, so thank you. We're looking for, at this point, we're not looking for any big resolution today. It seems like the OPEC group is going to push that off until tomorrow when larger OPEC plus group, including Russia, meets. But the expectation is that they are going to agree to extend their current quotas for another 3 months, so into the first quarter of 2021, and that will be a change. Right now, they're actually scheduled to increase production by 2 million barrels per day come January 1st. And it's interesting because oil has trended upwards recently, mostly on positive vaccine news, but there are a lot of fears in terms of demand. There's really a lot of demand weakness in Europe and the United States that doesn't look like it's going to resolve itself anytime soon. And so there's a lot of fears that if OPEC doesn't come through with this three-month extension, that we could be seeing an end to this oil rally.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up kind of where the oil is trading here. You take a look at the equity markets, for example, and they're, you know, as in the month of November, all-time highs, tremendous records for performance within a month. A lot of that based upon the expectations that the vaccines, in fact, are coming. The economies will, in fact, open up next year, and you need to make your bets today. Are you surprised that oil hasn't traded better?
I'm not surprised that oil hasn't traded better. I'm actually surprised that that this rally has been sustained for as long as it has, because the fundamentals are really not very good when you're looking at demand. And also when you're looking at supply, we've got Libyan oil production coming back on the market. And so that's could add another million barrels a day, regardless of what OPEC decides. So we've got lagging demand. These vaccines aren't really going to be, available to people all over the world until well into 2021. So I think oil is really looking at kind of a shorter term than the markets are. But so it's interesting that the rally we saw around the initial vaccine news has been maintained. And it does seem like it's up to OPEC a bit to keep or sustain or kind of put a floor on oil prices.
So, Ellen, what do you think? Or what are you hearing from the folks you talk to in the global energy space? What does a Biden administration mean? And What does it mean for kind of global oil supply? How do you think about that?
Yeah, this is the big question on everyone's mind. And it definitely means more support for alternative energies. But the big question is, what does it mean for U.S. production? Because that's really been a game changer in the oil industry over the past few years. Right now, the U.S. has backed off of its production highs, but that really was expected even before the COVID-19 pandemic kind of demolished a lot of production in the shale industry. But I think what we're looking at are further consolidation in the shale oil industry. There are big companies out there that are doing production, and I think they will fare fairly well under a Biden administration because a lot of the new regulations that he's looking at will actually be beneficial to them and will help keep smaller producers from really getting into the game.
But what about shale in general here? It seems like it's been, as you mentioned, a real game changer for global supply as the U.S. has become actually a net exporter here. Is the expectation that the best days of the U.S. shale patch are in the rearview mirror?
I do think that the production heydays are definitely in the rearview mirror, but remember that it was actually under the Obama administration that the U.S. Finally ended the oil export ban and became a player in the global oil market. So I don't think we're looking to see a reversal of that in any case. I do think a big question, though, is what's going to happen with China, because the Trump administration did succeed in getting China to agree to purchase a fairly large amount of oil and energy products from the United States. They haven't quite followed through on that, but they have made a very significant mark towards that goal. And so I think that everyone is going to be really wondering, where's the Biden administration going to go with this? Are we going to see more? Is he going to hold China to this promise, or is that kind of out the window?
So as it relates to China, Ellen, we've seen them, you know, weather the pandemic. They are on the other side of the pandemic. We're starting to see the economy put up some decent growth numbers as the economy opens up. Have we seen that in the global energy markets? Have the Chinese been stepping up their purchases on the global crude market?
Yeah, absolutely. China is really, I think, where a lot of the big national oil producers, Saudi Arabia, UAE, are really focusing their attention because they've issued new quotas for the independent refineries. So that means that those refineries are going to be drawing down oil stocks. They're going to be taking in more crude oil, refining, making more products, and shipping that out. And they're really looking at China to kind of be a bright spot in the oil demand picture.
So where do we see that? Like, do we see that in just the price of oil? Do we track shipments? And if we track shipments, do we track them from certain suppliers? How do you track that?
Yeah, so we definitely look at loadings that go to Asia, to China, and how that's going, but also the number of ships that are actually sitting, waiting in ports in Asia to unload their product. Sometimes that can be really backed up when refineries aren't taking crude
right.
oil in. And so as we see those stocks decline, that's an indication, and usually oil prices do respond when we get word that these ships are actually unloading their oil.
Yep. Hey, Ellen, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate that. At interesting times in the global energy space, Ellen Wald, president of Transversal Consulting and a Bloomberg opinion contributor. We appreciate her thoughts as always.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
We've been hearing from the good folks like Dave Wilson, Sarah Ponczek this morning about what a record-setting month it was for equity markets in the month of November. That's all well and good, but the cynic in me says, okay, now what do I do? Well, Matt Maley Chief Market Strategist at Miller Tabak and a founder of the Mailer Report. Hopefully he'll have some answers for me. So Matt, we've had an extraordinary run here in November, driven in large part by some really positive news on the vaccine front. And we had some more good news today. What is your thought for the remainder of the year heading into 2021, given that, boy, those pandemic numbers are just getting worse and worse?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly something to be concerned about, no question. I'm actually a little bit more concerned about it next year than I am this year. And for the main reason, well, first of all, today's pullback is no big surprise. I mean, we've had this great run, and I mean, especially the Russell 2000, I mean, that's up over 20% in just a month. So the fact that it's down almost, well, about 1.5% today is not a big deal. It needs to digest those gains in the overall market. It may have to do that for a couple of days. But the liquidity situation is still very strong, and it's kind of weird. I mean, we went back, whatever it was, 6-8 years ago, and people were talking about, hey, you know, if the economy starts to slow down, the Fed will add more stimulus or do more QE, so we don't have to worry. If the economy does better, well, that's good. We don't have to worry about that. So it was kind of a win-win. Now we're looking at that with, and I know it's oddly as it sounds, the virus and the lockdowns that are going with it and the concerns about the slowing growth will, I believe, entice the Fed to keep their liquidity spigots wide open through the end of the year and into the early next year, much like they did last year for a very different reason. They did it last year because we had the big repo problem in the yep. fall of last year, and they needed to keep the liquidity spigots open then. But I think both will lead into a very similar year, continued year in rally.
So, Matt, what we've certainly seen, not just in the month of November, but really since, you know, our September-ish or so, is that rotation trade. People kind of lightening up a little bit, some of those tried and true big tech names, whether it's an Amazon or an Apple, and kind of rotating into the names that will benefit with a rebound in the economy, presumably sometime in 2021. Cyclicals, small caps, so on and so forth. So is that a trade you like? If so, do you still like it here heading into 2021?
I do, but maybe not as much as I think a lot of people are. And the reason for this is that I think a lot of people seem to be wanting to throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to tech. Now, I certainly understand why some of these technology stocks, the mega cap names, you know, without that kind of, you know, with the vaccine and such, we're not saying, well, geez, this lockdown, stay at home is going to stay with us for a long time. So I'm not going to be willing to pay the huge valuations for these mega cap names. But boy, especially the chip stocks, they act very, very well, making new highs. You have other stocks away from the chip names like Seagate Technologies, Western Digital, things like that. So my point is, tech is not dead by any stretch of the imagination. So do some rotating into value, but also do some rotating within technology. I think that will bode well as we go into next year.
I'll bring up the dreaded E word, energy. We've got WTI crude at $45 a barrel. One could argue that if the economy is primed to open up on a global scale sometime mid next year, as these vaccines become more widely available, that perhaps that bodes well for the energy infrastructure. And it's certainly been beaten down over the last several years. Is that a sector you have some courage for?
I do. I mean, obviously, it's had a huge run here over the last, 2 months now, particularly in the last month, but also really for 2 months. And the XLE, which is the energy ETF, and of course the XOP, which also includes some of the drilling names. But the point is that they are overbought. They could pull back a little bit over near term, but they're also still very cheap. And you think about rotation. I mean, people are going to need, if this group moves up, especially institutional players, they are so underweight, this group. As it rallies, especially into the new year, if they're very underweighted, they're going to have to reweight their holdings. But more importantly, on a fundamental basis, well, last time oil, the XLE and the XOP were trading at these levels, oil was at $32. Now it's at $45. Even if it comes in a little bit, they're still cheap to their underlying commodity. So I think this is a group that on both a reweighting play and on a fundamental basis is going to do a lot better than a lot of people think. And if oil can hold up in the mid-40s, it doesn't have to take off, but it holds up in the mid-40s, and especially if it rallies more, it's really going to move because the institutions have to pile into the group. So I'm a lot more bullish on this group than a lot of other people. You need to be careful. I'm not saying jump in like you would the tech group, but it's a nice play.
Hey, how about just about 20, 30 seconds, banks, big banks here. Again, another unloved group. Is it time to take a look at them on in the anticipation of a better 21?
Well, it's, you know, again, very cheap group, so it's I think it's a good play. The key is what's going to happen to interest rates. To me, to be honest with you, for short-term traders, I think this thing can continue to rally because I think rates will hold up, and I think the yield curve will continue to steepen. But as we move into next year and we get to some of the, I think we're going to have a little bit less stimulus than a lot of people are hoping for from both the Fed and the Congress, that will cause those banks to take a little bit of a hiccup. So long-term players want to be a little careful. Short-term traders, I think you can ride the wave for a couple more months.
Matt Malley, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Matt Malley, Chief Market Strategist at Miller Tabak and founder of the Malley Report.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
It is time for Bloomberg Opinion. We are joined today by Chris Hughes, deals columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. And what deal, you may ask? Well, it is Merger Monday, and we've got a big one. S&P Global, the data company, buying another data company, IHS Markit, for about $39 billion in stock. Chris, thanks so much for joining us here. This is a big deal. Tell us about this deal. What's kind of the strategy be putting these two big global data players together? And I should note before you go on that Bloomberg LP does compete both against S&P and IHS Markit. So, Chris, what do you think is real drivers behind this deal?
I think it's probably two or three things. I mean, one is that this industry is consolidating. We've already seen some quite interesting combinations already. So think about the combination of London Stock Exchange and Refinitiv. So there have been deals happening already. So the trend is towards consolidation. And then if you think about what this combination does, it brings together the S&P brand, which is very strong, with IHS's other data services. So you end up with a combination which has got more to offer and to more customers. So you can cross-sell the offering between the two customer bases, with that scale, you become a much stronger company, and then presumably you can do more deals after that.
It's interesting. You know, when I was a research analyst, I spent some time looking at this industry, and for a long time, it was a very sleepy industry. Investors didn't pay much attention to it. There wasn't a lot of value assigned to it. But it just seems like in the last decade, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of consolidation. It's really taken off, and the valuations we're seeing here are just extraordinary. What are some of the new businesses that these companies are generating off of their this data that they have and the analytics that they have, and why scale might be important?
Yeah, there's a whole plethora of new products. I mean, one of them, of course, is in ESG, environmental, social, and governance research and analytics. And, you know, we saw a deal the other day in Europe with Deutsche Börse and ISS. So there is a whole array of new data points. If you think about where IHS Markit started off, way back when, it was really just looking at, prices in the credit market. And that has obviously now become a much, much bigger business. And as you say, the valuations put on these companies are much bigger. As it happens, actually, these two have seen their valuations converge. So they're emerging from a point of parity, but the increase both in the valuation multiples and the size of these companies has been quite tremendous over the last few years.
So, Chris, it seems like you mentioned that there's been a lot of consolidation in this space, so fewer and fewer players. It suggests to me that the regulatory risk here is not insubstantial. What's the view on the street?
Yeah, like I think that you have to take that into consideration because the sheer size of this combination, the complexity of it, is going to attract regulatory scrutiny, and that in turn obviously will add time and uncertainty to whether it actually completes. Now, the market is giving a cautious welcome to the combination. Mm-hmm. The other possible risk, obviously, is of a counter bid for IHS markets. So on the one hand, regulators will want to have a look, but on the other hand, maybe alternative transactions may emerge, especially as the price being paid for IHS, even though it's a big number at around about sort of $44 billion on a debt-free basis, is actually quite a low premium on where IHS was trading last week. So that could be an invitation to somebody to come in and try and break it up. So there are indeed, you know, quite a few uncertainties around whether this will actually go from, you know, announcement to full completion.
So, Chris, if I'm an M&A banker in the space, am I just dialing for dollars here today, telling all my clients, hey, this industry, you need to get bigger or you need to get out? Do you expect to see even more deals? Are there more to be done, or are we coming towards the kind of the later innings of consolidating the global data business?
I think you're probably close to the mark with the former than the latter, even though we are now seeing the emergence of some, you know, really, really large players. It doesn't feel like, you know, this is completely done yet. And as you say, if you pass on the consolidation, the risk is that you end up being a rather small local player and you don't really get that scale that enables you to go truly global. And I think that might be what we're seeing in Europe, actually, where, you know, Europe hasn't really seen a truly, you know, global scale operator in this industry emerge. How far does it go? Well, if you think about the nature of the deals that have been going on here, we've seen more and more diversification. So deals that, you know, would have raised an eyebrow, you'd have thought, well, that's not a logical combination, now appear logical in terms of just offering more and more diversification, a greater variety of data to a larger pool of end customers seems to be what is driving deal makers and CEOs in the space, which means that you could easily see combinations, certainly among the exchanges. If you think about Intercontinental Exchange, it'll be very interesting to see how they react to this combination. So I don't think we're in any way done yet.
Hey, Chris Hughes, thank you so much for joining us here. Chris Hughes, Bloomberg Opinion Deals columnist, talking about the S&P IHS deal. Again, a huge deal in that data analytics space. Enterprise value, $44 billion. Just an extraordinary kind of multiples there that we're seeing. And we should note that, again, Bloomberg LP competes with both S&P as well as IHS market in the global data and analytics business. But again, it looks like more consolidation in that space, data becoming more and more valuable going forward in a digital world. And it seems to be like a lot of markets, it's all about scale.
Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. You can subscribe and listen to interviews at Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you prefer. I'm Bonnie Quinn. I'm on Twitter at Bonnie Quinn.
And I'm Paul Sweeney. I'm on Twitter at PT Sweeney. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide at Bloomberg Radio.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.